Welcome to Live Daf, your online Daf Yomi Shir.
Shalom Aleichem and welcome back to today's Daf Hayomi Nidah Nun Zayin. We begin at the Mishnah. Anun Vavam Beis, 8 lines from the bottom. Back to the stains of the Isha Nidah Kolak Samim, all stains, Hanim Tzam, which are found out in the open in a Yisrael community, B'chol Mokim Tahirin, because they wouldn't just leave it out. They would wash it, remove the tumah pitfall. Likewise, it's something which, a type of undignified practice, which is not found amongst Yisraelim. So you assume that it's tahor. Either it's from a goy, or it's attributed to another source of a hema or chaya. Unless it's found in a private location, chutz v'nam tzom, except for those found b'chadorim, in the rooms of the sfivus and surrounding the beis hatumos, those rooms where the women would spend their time when they were nida, they had special designated rooms. So in those areas you can assume these ksavim are in fact dam nida of Israelis. Speaking of the beis hatumos, says the Mishnah, what if the beis hatumos belong to the kusim, which we briefly touched yesterday? So they were a community of individuals who underwent somewhat of a conversion. It turned out that they were adherent to certain aspects of our Torah, primarily Torah Shebichsav, the written Torah, but they would disregard and be callous in matters of the Rabbanon and uncertainties. So in some things you can trust them, and something you can't. Beis HaTumeh Shal Kusim Mitamen Ba'il. Anything in that room, under the same roof, is Tumeh. Why? Because there is a mace in there. How? Shem Kaivrin Shames HaNefalim. They would have an interesting practice. They would bury their miscarriages in those rooms. So anything in there is tamei, as though in an oil of a mace. Rabbi the Omer, no, they wouldn't bury their miscarriages. They would discard of it. And an animal would cart it away. Hence, there's no concern about presence of tumah. Now, why wouldn't they bury their nephilim? The Gemara will explain the reason for that. Speaking of the kusim, in what matters can we trust them, and what can we not trust them? Nemanim leimer, they trusted to say kavarnu shamas hanefalim or loy kavarnu. We put the nephil in there or not. So these are matters of Torah Shebichsav, a meis is metame anything but oil, based on the psukim of the Torah, so we can trust them, whether or not there's a nephil. Likewise, regarding the bechor obligation of the firstborn animal, they're trusted to say whether it's the first or not. Nemanim leimala behemah, they're trusted to speak about an animal and testify in bichra, whether she already had an offspring, and this is her second, in which case it's exempt from bichra status, or no, this is her first. Nemanim, al tiyun kvaris, they're trusted regarding the marking and locations of burial plots. Well, if they say, look, this place, here, we marked it, and otherwise, elsewhere, it's okay, you can trust them on it. Vein nemanim, we don't trust them on matters of uncertainties and doubt and the rabbanans. On overhanging trees, which might be overhanging over a grave. So there's an element of uncertainty. We can't trust them to testify, that where the grave is, where it isn't. Nor on the protrusions of the wall. Again, it's a type of overhang in matters of tumah. Nor regarding the presence or the absence of tumah in a beis hapras, in a field where there was a grave that was plowed over, which is considered tamei midrabban, of concern that there are some bones scattered throughout. So that's a rabbinic ordinance, not trusted on that. Zaklal, as per the following rule. If they're careful, you can trust them. If something that they're callous about, you can't take their word for it. Dabash hachashud, boy, something which they're callous about and suspected of disregarding, you can't trust them. Ein amun in olav. We turn to the next one. So according to Rabbi Yehuda, they wouldn't bury their nephilim. Why? Why wouldn't they grant them the privilege of burial? My drosh, what's it based on? Pasuk says. So again, they took very literally. They said like this: Leisasek v'lori echa shugav l'rishayim b'nachnosecha. Rashi brings, based on a sifri. It's referring to not selling your family burial plot. Leisasek v'lori echa, the gvul, the boundary, the plot of your family. So they would connect as follows. Only an adult who's entitled to inherit a nachla, a portion of Eretz Yisrael, he has a right to burial. Yesh lo yagvul. Chol she'en lo nachla baraya. Unviable offspring that doesn't have nachla, is not entitled to a burial plot either. Nemanim lema kavarno. But if they point to a specific area and say, look, we put the mace there, but we didn't, meaning it's tumah free, you can trust them on that. Why? Although they are certainly conformist in matters of the raisa, such as matters of becoming tumah, but they wouldn't hesitate to mislead you, which is based on the pasuk, lifnei iver, before a blind man, lo yisitein mich, don't place a stumbling block, which is learned as a reference to not only a physical stumbling block, but even a spiritual stumbling block. You can't mislead somebody and cause them to stumble in matters of spirit. They don't learn the pasuk that way. So they have no issue misleading somebody in matters of spirit. So how could you trust him when he says, look, this place has no tumah? What does he care about your tumah? But lastly, they don't adhere to the true meaning of v'lif neighbor l'sitei mishal. Amar avo. That's only if it doesn't pertain to them. But if you see a kohen of the Kusi community, how do you have a kohen in the Kusi community? They weren't kohanim. The Parsha explained that Sancheriv sent along some legitimate kohanim to lead them the way, to direct them and lead their communities. So you have a kohen from a Kusi community who is actually standing on that spot. Now he wouldn't do that if it was Tamei, because for himself, for his own self, all matters of spirit, he's certainly careful. So that's your litmus test. That's your indication that it's tamei free, as per his claim. B'koyin oimid sham. V'dum b'koyin tamei. Maybe he's a koyin who's already tamei, and therefore he has no issue with tumah. The nakat truma yadei, he's holding truma in his hands. He wouldn't allow it to become tamei. V'dum truma tamei. Maybe the truma itself is already tamei from before. The koachim and he's eating it, which he wouldn't if it was truma tamei. Yachim I remember. The koyin is there with his truma eating. What's the point? Why does the Mishnah have to even discuss such a simple, evident case? Mal Gatem, perhaps there's room to think. Loi Pekibi Yitzira, for all his good intentions, maybe he's not so aware of the intricacies of what constitutes a Vlad, which is Metame. Rashi says it has to be at least 40 days old. Prior to that, it's considered Maya Ba'alma, just plain water. Perhaps they're not cognizant of these intricacies, and therefore he, in his mind, thinks it's not tummy, which it really is. Kamash, on the point is no. They know what they have to know in a basic level, and if they're testifying that there's no tumah, you can trust them on that. Regarding Bechira as well, they can be trusted to claim that this is her first, this is her second, but less, Lu, once again, the same question. They're not concerned about your issues. Why would you trust them? But less, Lu, Luv Neivar, Sidi Mishal, Amar, Bechira, Amar, Bechira, once again, because he's Ba'ivid. On the animal which he's testifying as a non-Bechor, you see him working with it. Guys, is he's sharing it, he's working with it, which he wouldn't do if it was a real Bechor. So that's your indication. That's the case, then it's evidently so without it's not a chiddush. Well, there's a room to think, perhaps, like Bekiva Tilov, with all his good intentions, maybe he's not an expert in matters of discharge and birth. Rashi explains based on Gemara Bechoris, Tilov also, it's considered like a birth. If an animal discharges some sort of discharge, liquid, the following offspring is no longer a Bechor. So perhaps they're not experts in these matters. And what he's thinking to be a non-Bechor is really her first. Kamash, one, the point is, if he claims so, you can trust him. Naman al-Tziyan v'chul. So you can trust him in matters of marking the grave locations, and Rashi explains, to the point that if there's no marking, you know that it's tummy free, because certainly they would have marked the tumah. And the question is, even though this whole grave marking system was established by the Rabbanon, which typically they disregard matters of the Rabbanon, the answer is, given the chesiva, since there is a source in, although not in Chumash, but in Tanakh, in Yecheskel, regarding the obligation to mark places of tumah, mizor ziribay, they keep it. Echsev v'roa etzem adam. Right, you see a bone, ubonas leitzion, you make a mark. Aval ene mon leaschoches v'laprois v'chu. But in matters of doubt, of sveikos, you can't trust them. What are aschoches? It's not elyon aschoches. Elyon hamesach alaoritz. You have a tree overhanging, and it's Rashi says it's near the Beis Akvaris, where sometimes they would for lack of time, they would bury the maize right there on the road leading to the Beis HaKvaros, and there's a tree overhanging the area. And the suffix really is where under this tree is the grave located. And the Kusi points to one, you know, branch. Says, no, it's not under here. You can't trust him on that because, as Rashi says, Einoy chashal asafik. If it's not 100%, he's not careful. And he says, oh, it's probably, he speculates, probably only the other one. So he doesn't hesitate to mislead you to the extent that this area is tami. It's not Eilu in schachis. What are schachis? Eilu na mesach l'or is a tree shattering over the earth. Prois, a similar case where you have something, stone protruding out of a fence. It's not avonim prois, it's menagoder. So same idea, there's tuma under one, and he's testifying that this one is tuma free. You can't trust him because he's callous in matters of uncertainty. Third is Beis HaPras, which is a field where there was a grave which was plowed over. Rabbanim considered the whole general area, 100 by 100 amma, as being tame for concern that there was some bone fragments that were scattered around. And again, it's a matter of suffix, which the Kusi is not careful about. Beis HaPras. And in fact, since it's only the Rabbanon, we have some leniencies applied to it as well. Amar Rav Shmuel, when a person wants to get through the Beis HaPras safely, he can blow his way through, assuming that his blowing action would have scattered, would have cleared away from any bone fragments. Rav Yehuda bar Ami b'Shmuel Rav Yehuda Amar, he says another leniency, Beis HaPras shenidash tar, Beis HaPras which was trampled upon properly. It's tar because if there's anything there, it would have been totally disintegrated and eliminates any tumah concern. Further on the topic of Beis HaPras, V'tana, Acharish Beis HaKvaris. We learn that if a person plows over a grave or Beis HaKvaris, Harizois Beis HaPras, the surrounding area, is now labeled as Beis HaPras, and is Metamim Durabon, about Kama, how far does this go? The length of a typical furrow, which is 100 amma on either direction, so it's 100 by 100 amma square, which is exactly Beis HaPras in an area which you can plant four sa'ah. Rashi explains this is based on the formula where we know that the Chatzar HaMishkan was 100 by 50 and was based sa'ah sayim, considered two sa'ah worth. Here is double 100 by 100, which is base arbaas sin. Rabbi Yossi takes it a step further. Rabbi Yossi says chamish, five sin, which is a bit bigger. So you can't trust the Kusi on these matters, which are midrabanan, which he has no concern about. Asks the Gemara, really, you can't trust the Kusi on a matter of a base apras? Vayimahemni, batani, we have a brisa which seems to say you can trust him on this matter too. So the shavut b'kever, you have a field where a grave disappeared. So basically, the location of the grave is unknown. Which Rashi says is actually one, another variation of Beis HaPras. So out of uncertainty, we have to be metame the whole field. Let's say the Kusi gets up and declares, well, I know, it's not here. Neman Kusi loyme en sham kaver. V'sheinu meida al guvashel kaver. Look, he's pointing at a certain spot. He says, look, there's no grave, I can vouch. There's no grave there, you can trust him on that. Because Rashi says, guvashel kaver, the essence of kaver for him is very serious. So if he points to a specific spot and he says, look, right there is no kever, you can trust him on that. Likewise, if you have the thing with the tree and he points to a specific branch, he says, under this branch, tummy free, you can trust him on that too. So he's not trusted on the totality, but on a specific spot. It's a tree that's overhanging, once again, the same point, because he's testifying about the absence of a specific kever, a specific location. So again, we see that he's trusted on these matters, and you're telling me that since these matters are suffic and drabanon and doubtful, you can't believe him, he's not adherent to that. You're right, in general, you can't trust him, because sure, he'll feel free, he'll take the liberty to presume there's no tumah here, and he'll be Saimech, he'll rely that the tomb is elsewhere, in the field or under the other side of the tree. But here we're speaking, this price that you just quoted is speaking, that he's actually walking throughout the entire area. He's covering the whole 9 yards. So he's walking throughout the whole field. And he's testifying, look, there is no tomb here. or hair. Yochel Mayim Meimro. Well, if that's the case, then he's outright testifying about every single spot. Then why would I think that he's not believed? Again, he's believed on the basic, fundamental, Tumah matter. As long as he's not getting involved in suffix and uncertainties in the Rabbanon. So if he's walking throughout the field and saying, look, there's no grave here, there, or anywhere in this place, so you can trust him. What's the point of discussing him? All the time there's room to think, perhaps, Ritzur Nafka, Rashi explains. Maybe this field isn't the perfect square as you're thinking. There's a little strip protruding out of the field in the corner. True, he's claiming, look, there's no tumah anywhere throughout this area covering this whole, you know, square. And perhaps there really is tumah in the field, but in that corner. And the Kusi is sort of relying that it's over there. So perhaps it still has tumah. Kamash, on the point is, no, we're not concerned about a possible strip. And since you see he's walking around through the entire territory, claiming there's no kever, you can trust him on that. Zaklal. And the Mishnah concludes, you should know, this is a general rule. Something that, a matter that he's not careful about, you can't trust him on it. Zaklal suyimai, what's this klal coming to cover? Two more items. Lasuyi tchumen v'yaynesach. He claims something regarding the location of tchum Shabbos. Ad kan tchum Shabbos, the city extends until this point, you can't trust him on that because he's not very serious in those matters. V'yaynesach, likewise, he's coming to testify regarding, you know, wine that a guy may have touched. You can't trust him on these matters, which he himself is not careful about. Okay, so in conclusion, on what matters is the Kusi trusted? On what matters is he not trusted? In plain and simple deraisa, matters he is trusted. Direct tumah, he's going to be trusted on that. Now, although he has no hesitation, misleading others, but as we said, we're talking that he himself is experiencing it, which is our indication that in fact he's being honest. But not on matters of Safik or the Rabbanon, Ziyaynesach, Tchumen, all types of Safik, Tumois. On those matters, you can't trust him because he himself doesn't take those too seriously. Okay, we turn the daf and begin a new parak. Says the Mishnah, Royo Kesem, Al Basoro. Okay, so the Isha discovered a stain on her flesh, not sure where it came from. Is it self-generated damnida, which makes her tummy, or is it from elsewhere, a dead louse or something that left behind a stain? So it depends on location. Keneged beis haturfa, if it's aligned, if it's opposite the source of the woman's damnida, then it's presumed to be damnida and she's tmeya. But otherwise, the shleged beis haturfa, if it's not aligned with the beis haturfa, we blame it on elsewhere. We say it came from a different source, tahira, and she's tahira. For example, al keba, you find it on her heel, which is right below the beis haturfa, or the resh goidla, on top of the the front of the large toe, tmeya. However, al shayka, what if it's on her thigh, her leg, bal parsesel, or her foot? So it depends where. Mibifnim, if it's facing inward, so basically it's facing the other thigh, facing the other foot. So this is right foot, this is left foot. This is mibifnim, right? The inside, facing the other side. So then, tmeya. Mibachutz. But if it's on the outside, so she is tahira. Falastodin, mikana mikana. What if it's on the sides? Sort of the front and the back. So basically, the foot can be divided into four. You have, from the woman's perspective, you have the right side, which is facing out, that's machutz, that's tar. This is the right foot. You have the left side of that right foot facing the left foot, that's called mibifnim, that's tame. The front and the back surfaces, balastad, mekan, mekan, likewise, it is, she is tahir, because it's not attributed to the damnida. Rosal Chaluk, what if she finds a stain on her garment? Again, location is what determines. Below the waist or above the waist? Mena Chagur Ulamata, below the belt area. Then she is Tmeya. Mena Chagur Lamala, above that area, she's Tahira. What about on the sleeve? Rosal Bes Yachal Chaluk, the sleeve of this robe. So it depends if it can reach the source of damnida. Imagia connected based on torfa. It's made from love, but otherwise tahara. So let's say she would use it as a blanket at night. She would remove it and miskasa with a live and cover with it at night. So since it travels around, so anywhere on that garment can be attributed to damnida. Any kesem found anywhere in that garment, it's mayor. Makes her tummy b'nei shehu chayzer, because it moves around and it could have got its stain from the makam of nida. V'chein b'pulyus, likewise. Another type of blanket, pulyus blanket, has the same halach. Amar Shmuel, you should know that min ha-tira dam nida is only metamei isha. Let's say she knows it's her dam, it doesn't matter. Unless it came with hargasha, with personal bodily sensation, with awareness, with feeling. Amar Shmuel, batka karka olam, yashva olea. Let's say she takes a close look at the ground and then sits down on it. So she determines there's no stain, there's nothing there. She sits down and she finds umata dam olea. She finds dam right there. There's no way it could have come from elsewhere. Tahira, she's still tahira. Shnema bibsara. The pasuk describing the nida experience speaks about bibsara. In her flesh. It has to be felt personally. She has to feel it in her body. Although it's 100% from her, but it has to come about with a feeling, a sensation, with an awareness. Ask the Gemara. This pasuk has already been applied for a different halacha. To teach us location, that even if the dam hasn't yet fully exited the person, it's just on its way out in the outer chamber, it's matama, even though it's still bibsara. So this pasuk is unavailable to teach us the hargasha requirement. Imkain answers the Gemara. If it's only coming to teach us that halacha, let me quote babasar. Pasuk will say babasar without the hay, which already teaches us that even though it's still in the basar, it's metame because it's on its way out. Might be sarah. What's the extra hay coming to teach us? It has to be felt with hargasha. Shmami no, ashatayrish with sarah. But still, it's needed for something else. If Sarah teaches us, the blood has to travel along the flesh of the Isha. So slide along the flesh, as opposed to being contained in a tube or in something else as it's coming out. As opposed to dam that's found inside in a partially formed fetus. Or in a clump of flesh. So these are not Matame the Isha, because the dam did not flow directly alongside the basar of the Isha, the chatzitza. And it's not matame. So that's all learned from Bivsara, leaving it unavailable for Shmuel's chiddush of the hargasha requirement. Well, they both can be learned from the same pasuk. Shtar tisha masmino. Bivsara can teach us both. She has to feel it, and has to be in contact with the basar as it exits. Toshma. Now comes a series of kashas on Shmuel, who presents that Anisha is only tami min ha-tayra. She has a hargasha experience as she's emitting the dam. Tashma, Isha she'isa tzorcheha. This is a Mishnah coming up in a couple of days. Anisha is involved in shedding her waters, tending to her needs, and she notices some dam alongside the Be'erag line, Rasa dam. Now, there are two options to consider. Either it's dam nida, which is unlikely, as Rashi points out, because the miraglayim run a different channel. Unlikely to have dam nida accompany miraglayim. Or you can say that the somehow. So where's the nida, the dam from? That's from some sort of internal wound or something that's generating dam. It's not dam nida. Or you can say that the miraglayim somehow backed up and drew out some dam nida. Rameo Imet depends on her position. Ima Imedes, if she's tending to her needs when standing, which is not typical, Rashi says, evidently there's a very, very strong need, so there's lots of pressure. Otherwise it wouldn't work. So it's likely that the Meraglayim backed up. We have to assume that it backed up. Vaisu dam, went back to the source of dam, and it drew out some blood, which is not typical, but here, because of the intense pressure, it happened. And therefore she's tmei. V'mi'yoshev es toyra, she's sitting position. That's okay, because in that position, we don't assume that the dam is dam nida. Rashi says, in derech, dam nida lotzeis meraglayim. It's not common for the dam nida to come out with meraglayim. And since it's a conventional shedding of water, which is running a different track than the nida, dam, so we assume it's not dam nida, it's dam avi maka, and she's torah. Fine. Now, question, was there hargasha, which according to Shmuel, the precondition for tumah? Or was it no hargasha? Echadam. Either hargasha, she felt something. She felt, you know, the womb generating dam nida. So why are you absolving her when she's in a sitting position? I mean, the fact is she felt the dam exiting the makar of dam. A lovely hargasha. Apparently there was no hargasha. Okay, so then why is she tummy at all? The mission says she's a medlish, she's tummy. Why? No hargasha, no tummy. Certainly we're speaking that she had an hargasha. But perhaps she mixed up the signals. Maybe we can suggest hargasha's miraglaim. She thought it was a hargasha of dam nida, but really it was the miraglaim on their way out. So it's sort of up in the air. She felt something, we're not sure what. And therefore it depends on her position. Aymedes, if she's standing where it's more likely, then in fact this is dam nida. How the miraglaim lamaka? We have to speculate that the Meraglayim backed up to the source of dam nida, Baisi dam, and drew out some dam. But if it's Yeshevis, which is standard and typical, we just blame the dam nida on some sort of scratch, some sort of skin, you know, wound, and she's tohir. But certainly, in order to become tamei, hargosh is required, as per Shmuel's halacha. Toshmai comes another kasha on Shmuel. Aid, a cloth, which she used to inspect herself, to wipe herself. She knows in tachas akar, which was found underneath her pillow, with a stain, v'nimtza, alavda. Is it dam nida or not? It depends on its shape. Im ogle, if it's a round stain, it couldn't have come from a wipe, which would have generated an elongated type of stain. So she's tar, we blame it on some sort of louse that got swished in. If mashach tamei, if it's elongated, then it's tamei, because it's clearly a personal wipe. And she is considered a nida, echidam. Again, what happened? What happened with the hargasha element? Was there or is there not? Either hargasha, she had hargasha, ogal my Torah. So if it's round, how could you absolve her? The fact is, she felt dumb, flowing out of her hargasha. Apparently there's no hargasha. Tani mashuk tami. Still the mission says if it's elongated, she's tummy. Why? How could she become a nida without hargasha? Lo yilam hargasha. No, we're talking she had hargasha. But perhaps she mixed up the signals again. Vemer, we can speculate, Hargosha's aid havoi. When she performed that inspection with the aid, that sensation, an internal sensation, in her mind, felt like a Hargosha of Dam Nida. So it could go either way, we're not sure. So we have to determine based on the shape and the configuration of that stain, which will tell us, which will help us define the nature of that hargasha. If it's mashach, it's elongated, vadim gufa also, in this case, we attribute it to herself, and she's tummy. Ogle tov, if it's round, we say it's just a random stain, because it wouldn't be round if it would have been her dam. Toshmai comes another kasha on Shmuel, from a Mishnah, which again seems to indicate that hargasha is not a requirement for dam nida. Nimtzal shaloi, so after the husband and wife were together, he discovered some dam on his cloth that he used to wipe himself. Tamei, that confirms that they were tamei when they were together. They're obligated to be mekarb. Why else would he find dam on himself? Nimtzal shalo, if it's found on her cloth, it depends how soon after. Eschim, right after. That confirms that the dam was already there when they were together. Tamei, v'chayav mekarb. Nimtzal shalo, achazman, if you find it after a while. Tamei, misafik. So there's a suffix that perhaps she was already tummy at the time, but uptur b'na karbon, you can't bring a carbon. since it's only a suffix. And again, what happened in terms of hargosha? Hechidami, idargisha, she had hargosha. When they were together, she felt the opening of the womb, she felt the dam being generated. Why does Mishnah say if she found it a while later, they're absolved? The fact is, she can vouch that there was dam when they were together. El lav le'agisha, apparently there was no hargosha. Uktani, and still the Mishnah says, she found it on her side, immediately after, the question is, why is they tummy? In absence of hargosha, which is a pre-requirement for this. No, we're talking that she had hargosha when they were together. But perhaps she mixed up the signals. There was some sort of internal movement, but perhaps it can be attributed to them being together. Ema, we can say hargosha shamash, eva zachar, but maybe it was attributed to that. So it's a bit of an unknown. And therefore, it can't be more than a suffix. And therefore, it's treated accordingly. Toshmai comes another raya. Have a brisa. Nimtza ta'imer. Turns out that we have three rules regarding uncertainties on damnida. Shloisha sfekas bish. Number one, al-psara. She finds a stain on her flesh. We're not sure. Where's it from? Is it damnida? Is it not? Safek tamei, safek toyer. What's the alacha? Tamei. She's tamei. She finds it on her robe, al-chaluka, on her garment. We're not sure. Safek tamei, safek toyer. In this case, she's toyer. The Gemara will explain the difference. Number three, v'magoyis uves seitois, halicha ha'arif. In matters of touching taharis or moving them, are they effective? It depends on the majority. Rashi explains, we're talking about an isha. It doesn't have a set schedule for seeing dam, which was standard in those days, and she doesn't have that, you know, organized life, and she's always seeing dam randomly, and she knows she's touched matter as of taharis, etc. So what's the status of those taharis? It goes based on majority. For most of her days are with dam, then we have to treat them as tam. So let's dwell on that third halacha. The majority is what determines her status. My halech ahar. What does it mean to go after roiv? Lav, let's assume. Depends on the majority of her days, of her experiences. In roiv yameh tamein, most of the days are considered tamei because of her dam nida. Tamei, she's presumed to be tamei. Vavka loy argosha. And we're assuming she doesn't have confirmation because she had no hargosha. So why is she tamei at all? If hargosha is a precondition for a tum? Loy, lo, no, no. In roiv yameh hargosha chazi. Rice is referring to a woman who most of her days sees dam with hargosh. So even though now she can't vouch for hargosha, tamei, she's presumed to be tamei, even though we don't have confirmation of hargosha or even of dam, because we follow the majority. The emor, we have to say, we have to speculate, hargosha, perhaps she did have hargosha, since most times she does. She wasn't mindful of it, but it was there. Okay, so that settles that. Now let's go back, once we're speaking about the brisa, let's reanalyze the brisa. Omar, al-psara, a stain found on her basar, source unknown, safek tami, safek tahar, in this case it's tami, but al-chaluka, on her garment, safek tami, safek tahar, in this case we're lenient tahar. The question is why? What's the difference between the kesem on the basar or the chaluk? Echidam, what exactly occurred? Where did you find it? Im hachagur lamata, if it's below the waist. That would explain why the bodily stain is tummy, as per the halacha and the Mishnah. It's aligned with the beis hatumah. So why are we absolving her if she finds it on her garment? In that location. Al chaluk amaya tor, but now we have a Mishnah. If you find it on her garment, in the lower area, in hachagur lamata, she's tummy. Okay, so maybe it was in the upper area. That would explain why it's not a concern on the garment. So why is it a concern if you find it on herself in that area, which is totally out of bounds? Al basara my tummy, about time we have a Mishnah. The same exact location requirement applies to the body as well. Ras adam al basara, if it's upstairs, like in Agdavis HaTorah, she's tummy, tahira. So which way is this? We have two answers. Either we can say it was found in the lower area, Mechagur Lamat. Or you can say it was found in the upper area, Mechagur Lamat. As far as. You can suggest Mechagur Lamat was found below. That's not a standard finding. There's some history behind it. She experienced a dam all around her. Kosher dam. She passed through a market, a butcher area, where there is an abundance of dam, which is benign, coming from the animals. Shechtadir. Very possible that her stain is sourced in that dam. So we have an alibi. We have an excuse. We have something called a taliya to hinge it on. Al basara. So that's why it depends where you find it. On herself or on her garment. If it's on herself, mugufasa, we assume it came from her own source of dam. Why? Because it was splattered from the outside. It wouldn't be on her flesh. It would be on her garment. So if it came from elsewhere, al chaluku miboylei ishtakuch, it should be found on her garment, not on her skin below the garment. And that's why it's tummy. But al chaluku, if you find it outside on the garment, mi'almasa, you're safe and sound. Blame it on the butcher. In fact, it makes more sense that it came from elsewhere. Because otherwise, what's it doing on top? If it came from herself, al basar miboylei ishtakuch, you find it on her skin, not on her garment. But let's just point out, this is strictly because she has a cover story. We can attribute the dam to an alternate source, the shuktal shel tabachim, that allows us the liberty, the friendship between the cholak, which is tor, and the basar, which is tam. But she didn't pass through, she didn't have this experience of shuk shel tabachim. In this case, the Mishnah clearly does not differentiate. And wherever she finds the kesem, on the basar or the cholak, we attribute it to the source of Nida, perhaps it splattered, it jumped around, since we don't really have an excuse and coverage for the dam. We might say another way to explain the Braisa. Where was the stain found? Below, Mechagur Lamal. Above, Mechagur Lamal. So how could you attribute it to the woman's source of Nida? How could it get up there? Kigoin, this Dakro. She flipped, she did some exercise. So it's possible, it's feasible, that it came from her dam nida. So basically, it can go either way. And therefore, we say like this: al basara, vaday mugufasoy. In this case, we say if it's on her basar, we attribute it to herself. Dimam asoy, because it came from elsewhere. Al chaluka iboylish takuche, should be on her garment. But if you find it on her baguette, al chalukim al masoy, we blame it on the outside, because dimigufa asoy, because it came from herself, al basara iboy el shtakuch, she should have found it on her skin. So again, because here we have a mitigating factor, location. At the same time, she flipped. So we have all kinds of elements to consider. Which way is more likely? So in this case, we have the liberty to make that distinction between the basar and the chaluk. Okay, so let's just recap again. The rules are like this. A kesem is metame, provided it can be attributed, it's more likely to be attributed to the Beis HaTorah, to the Mokor of Damid. The Mishnah sets forth a very simple formula. In the upper areas, mechagur lamala, whether it's the basar or the chaluk, tohar. The lower areas, whether it's basar or the chaluk, she's tummy. The Braisa adds another variation to this halacha. Suppose there are other factors to consider. Shuk shel tabachim, which provides a kosher source of dam. In that case, it can be suggested that even if the dam was below the chagur, we have an alternate source. So that, together with the fact that it was found on the garment, which makes it less likely that it came internally, makes her tar. On the flip side, we have a case where she flipped. Right? So he found it in the upper area, but is dakra, which gives it a chance that it came from below, from the dam nida, and it sort of splattered up on top. So once again, we make that distinction. On the basar, where it's more likely that it came from an internal source, otherwise, if it came from outside, how would it get through the chaluk into the basar? So in that case, she's tummy, but without the chaluk, in this case, we say, look, fact is, you found it above. Fact is, another factor which says, look, found it externally. Externally, it probably came from an external source. So we sort of disregard the flip factor, and we say, look, it's up on top. That's one point to consider. It's also on the garment, which is indicative of having arrived from outside, so she's torn. Okay, in any case, pertaining to our chiddush of Shmuel, who requires hargosha, in this case, there's no hargosha at all. Ketani, mias. In any case, what does the Braisa tell us? Al besara, she finds a stain on her basar. What happens? Even though it's safiktam, safiktar, can go either way. The Braisa says, tame, as we explained, right? What happened to hargosha? Va'afagav lo hirgisha. So you see, the absence of hargosha doesn't absolve her. Unlike Shmuel, who said, hargosha is a precondition for a tum of oitanan. Look at our Mishnah. There's no mention of hargosha. Haroya kesem, al-basar, discovers a stain. It's all about location, and that's it. Keneged beis ha-tur for shistmeyo. Even without hargosha, avala hargisha. So clearly, hargosha is not needed for tumah. Unlike Shmuel, who states, based on the pasuk, hargosha is a precondition for tumah. Amar rav yirmi midifti. Yeah, that's minat Torah. Moed Shmuel, even Shmuel would agree that although without hargosha, there's no tumah minat Torah, but midirabonan there is. Every stain is mitame midirabonan, even without hargosha. Shitmeya midirabonan. Rashi explains. Dilma argosha. Well, Avadaita, perhaps there was hargosha, but she wasn't aware of it. Tesis adds, no. Even if we can confirm that there's no hargosha, afilu muchsak lo shlo yugisha, says Tesis, shitmeya. Hoil v'rasa damnida, since it's damnida, so even without hargosha, absolutely without hargosha, she's tame. Because it resembles damnida, and it's a tumah midirabonan. Even Shmuel would agree to that. Rav Ashi says like this. Shmuel, who the Amakur of Nechemya. Now, Tesis explains that Rav Ashi is not disagreeing. He agrees that there is a hargosha requirement in the Torah. And even without hargosha, she's tumah midirabonan. But when Shmuel told us that there's no tumah, when you find a stain on the karka that she inspected before she sat down, in that case, there's no tumah even with Rabbanon, he says. Shmuel Domek Rav Nechemya. It's not Rav Nechemya Eimer. Not every stain is metame with Rabbanon. Depends where it was found. If it's found on a beged or a kli, which is mekabel tumah, then the stain is metame the isha as well. It goes hand in hand. You see, Chachamim wanted to present things in a consistent manner. Typically, Chachamim, when they make zeris, it's packaged neatly, it's consistent, it's clear, it's conclusive. So when the Chachamim apply tumah to even a stain, it has to conform to certain requirements, certain parameters. It has to be located on an item which is susceptible to tumah, a chair, a garment, but not on the plain ground outside, which is not susceptible to tumah. Because otherwise, it presents an inconsistency. On the one hand, we're saying, well, this spot generates tumah and makes the isha tameh. Well, if it's not affecting the surface that it's sitting on, you see, really, damnida has a dual effect. When an isha generates damnida, there's a flow coming out of her, she becomes tameh 7 days, etc. But there's another aspect to tumas nida, the dam itself, the material, has its own tumah. And it's matami, something which it comes into contact with. So if it's sitting on something which is not open to that tumah, so on the one hand, we're sort of disregarding this dam, and then we're going to say, well, because of this dam, the isha is tumah, it's inconsistent. And therefore we have a rule, if the dam nida is situated on an item on a surface, which is typically not eligible for tumah, it can't be makabal ksamim, it's not affected by ksamim, which means to say that the woman who generated that stain is Torah as well. Okay, so basically we had a big chiddush of Shmuel. Bivsara requires hargosha. It's not enough to have the dam from the isha. She has to feel, she has to sense it, she has to be aware of it as it's exiting. But the Gemara concluded based on many kashas, that's only minat Torah, but Rabbanon. Even a stain, a random stain found on a basar, on a garment, which can be attributed to the Isha, as per the parameters that were established, location, circumstance, is metamim derabbanan. However, Rav Ashi adds, provided it's sitting on something which is eligible for tumah, as opposed to the ground outside. Now, Bishlam the Rav Ashi, according to Rav Ashi, that the point here is that it's not even makabel tumah midrabbanan because it's on the karka. That explains why Shmuel specified karka to bring out this point. Bishloim mele Rav Ashi hanit to amkamer karka, because karka is not makabel tumah, therefore she's absolved of any tumah. El Rav Yirmiyah, but according to Rav Yirmiyah, that Shmuel is merely discounting the tumah d'oraisa because of lack of hargasha, but she would still be tumah midrabbanan because of the stain even on the ground. So why did Shmuel relate to karka, which is not your typical circumstance? The same would apply even on a garment. Mayuri karka, filo glimanami. Let me buy a kamar. Yes, he could have said that, but it's a bigger point, a bigger chiddush. Let me buy a glima. It goes without saying, a garment, limidic shopper, which is a bit more difficult to inspect and ensure that it's stain free. And therefore, if she finds a stain later on, it could be blamed on elsewhere. It could theoretically have come from elsewhere. It could have been there before. So in that case, she's certainly tahor. Ela filu karka, but even this karka, which is flat and exposed, the mivdek shava, which can easily be inspected properly, and since she looked it over, confirming there's no dam there. In which case is more reason to assume that it came from her, still she's tahor. The reason is because it's not about likelihood, it's about the hargasha requirement, which in this case was not there. Now, the halacha l'maaseh, we pass from like both points. The min ha-Torah, a hargasha is required, otherwise, if it's just a random stain, it's tameh olam midrabbanan. Plus the additional condition, which is it has to be situated in something which is makabel tumah, and only then is the issue going to be affected by the kesem. Okay, so in conclusion, we discussed the mission about the kusim, who were adherents to matters of Teresh B'Chsav and disregarded matters of Teresh B'Alpeh, so we can trust them accordingly, and matters of outright tumah, in cases where they're sort of vouching, like you see the kain standing there with the tumah, so he's serious, with his information, so you can trust them. But not on matters of Safek, where they would easily disregard the concerns, or matters of the Rabbanon in general, in that case, we have to have independent confirmation of those facts. We move on to Nuperik, Ray of Kesem. Typically, an Isha actually senses and feels the flow, which makes her Tamei Min HaTorah. According to Shmuel, that's in fact a precondition for Tamei Min HaTorah. But even without that, even just a stain discovered on the Basar or the Cholok would be sufficient to mitame the Isha midrabbanan, provided we have no excuse for it. We have no Tilia, nothing to attribute it to, no alibi, no cover story. So if it's in a location which indicates Damida, as per the parameters set in the Gemara, she is considered Tami. In general, it's about location. Lamata min ha-chagor, she's Tami. Lamala min ha-chagor, she's Tohar. And as we concluded, lack of Rakosha would absolve her min ha-Torah, but still Tami. The Rabbana provided it's sitting on something which is Makabal, Tumah. All the best to you and Hatzlacha.